are tuned in to Mid-Morning Empowerment here on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
All right, so getting straight into it. Yolanda, welcome, welcome, welcome once again. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me. And I'm glad we sorted out our technical difficulties so we can have this conversation.
Yes, a very important conversation, in fact, that we're having. Common triggers and risk factors to depression, which doesn't develop in a vacuum, we know, and various factors contribute to its onset. While some may experience depression due to life events, others may be more vulnerable due to genetic or biological reasons. And so today we're going to be unpacking the common triggers and risk factors associated with depression. So, Yolanda, what are some of the most common triggers for depression?
So I thought about this question and I thought I would give you guys the top 10 triggers mm-hmm. most likely to cause a depression. The first one is the loss of a loved one. Mm. So the grief from the death, a separation or an estrangement is number one on the list. Mm-hmm. Number two is then chronic stress. Ongoing work, financial or relationship stresses are a big contributor to developing depression. On number three, trauma and past abuse, if not dealt with, child abuse, domestic violence. Then major life changes we have at number four. Mm-hmm. So don't underestimate that moving or a job loss or retirement, especially in the elderly. Then number five, loneliness and social isolation. It's so important that we have community, that we have support systems. Number six, health problems and chronic pain and kind of feeling stuck in that, not getting healing or getting better.
Right.
At number seven, we have that negative thought patterns, criticism, seeing everything that's wrong with the world, mm-hmm. not what's right with the world. Number eight, substance use. At number eight. At number nine, hormonal and biological factors. And then number 10 is just a lack of sleep and poor self-care.
Sure. Interesting. So it can start with something so simple. Some of these sound like very simple ways to start, and then it ends up as depression.
Definitely. And I think people sometimes underestimate that depression doesn't happen in a day. Mm. It's so gradual. And then in the beginning, you might just think, oh, I'm getting older, or, you know, I'm going through a difficult time. This will pass. And then not checking in with yourself regularly. And then after a while, not realizing how bad it's actually gotten.
Mm. Mm, exactly. Now, how do biological and genetic factors influence a person's risk of developing depression?
Okay, so depression is influenced by both biological and genetic factors, mm-hmm. making some individuals more vulnerable to developing the condition. So looking at the end of genetic predisposition, if you have a family history, if there's a parent or a sibling that has depression, mm-hmm. your risk for developing it is 2 to 3 times higher Whoa. Than the general population. Okay, but genes alone don't just cause depression. Mm-hmm. It's also the expression thereof. So life experiences influence these genes to then express. So for example, you might have the genetic predisposition, but a strong support system or good coping skills, so you might never actually develop depression. Mm. Same with people who might have the gene predisposition and then go through very difficult times and then kind of just triggers that gene expression. Looking in terms of the biology aspects, that would uh-huh. be the brain chemistry, hormonal and endocrine factors, as well as inflammation. Inflammation is a big one. So keep that inflammation down through good exercise, healthy habits, healthy diets.
Interesting. And, you know, when you speak about the genetics, would that include, for example, when you were talking about the common triggers, you talked about, for example, not getting enough sleep and just that kind of a lifestyle where you're not getting good nutrition, not getting enough sleep, and you talk as a possible trigger. Mm-hmm. So would you say that if, for example, I've struggled with depression because of my lack of sleep, or at least the lack of sleep was my trigger, if my children... if I make sure that they develop habits of, you know, healthy habits, they wouldn't necessarily fall into the same, into depression as well as they get older?
Definitely. And that's one of the things we always encourage people to remember, that even if you have given your children the gene, it's still important that they learn the skills to manage and deal with that.
Okay. Got that. Now, can lifestyle factors, I mean, you did just tell us about factors such as diet, sleep and exercise impacting the likelihood of depression, but maybe tell us exactly how that happens.
Okay, so this is where I want to introduce you to two terms that people tend to use interchangeably, but they mean two different things.
Okay.
So we have mental health and then mental wellness. Mm. So mental health just refers to, do I have a diagnosable disorder? Do I have depression? Clinically depressed, clinically anxiety, do I have the disorder?
Mm-hmm.
And then mental wellness is, do I have the habits and the support systems that help me deal with triggers and stresses around me?
Okay.
Because someone can have a mental illness, they can be diagnosed with depression, but have great mental wellness to the point where they're asymptomatic, the depression doesn't affect them as much. They have it, yes, but they live happy, normal lives. Whereas people might not have a mental illness, they might not be diagnosed with a depression, but have very poor mental wellness, and then be worse off than someone that is actually diagnosed with depression, because they don't have that support, they don't have the energy, nutrition, sleep habits, all that goes out the window. So that's very important to understand the difference between illness and wellness.
Interesting. Now, let's speak about trauma now and past experience. How do those contribute to long-term mental health challenges?
Okay, so trauma can affect us, definitely. I think how trauma and past experiences contribute to long-term mental health issues is that trauma actually changes the way the brain functions. And it changes the structure of the brain.
Okay.
And people don't always realize this. So you might have structural changes within the amygdala, which it becomes overactive, making you hypervigilant. Other areas would be the hippocampus, that's responsible for memory and learning. And that would kind of have you have flashbacks or intrusive thoughts. And then the cortex becomes weaker, and then you have difficulty regulating your emotions, and all of these things lead to obviously more triggers, more emotion dysregulation. Trauma also has you create core belief systems about the world. And those belief systems are almost like a lens you view the world through.
Yeah.
And everything just becomes dark and difficult. So that, accompanied with these functional and structural changes, becomes very, very difficult. Also, trauma leads to maladaptive coping mechanisms and relationship issues, and they just compress and combine at the end of the day, where individuals tend to then be so preoccupied with the trauma and not realizing how it's affecting their functioning, leading to illness, leading to diagnoses. And yeah, so trauma is one of those things that we should really look out for. But the good news here is the brain can heal. So through therapy, through lifestyle changes, through maybe sometimes medication, the brain can heal and get you back to a better space.
Sure. That actually brings me to a question I've had actually on my mind for the last few days. I was thinking, it was after a conversation with a friend about something that someone had gone through. And I started asking myself, what exactly is trauma? What constitutes trauma? How do we define that? Because there are some things that people go through which might be referred to as traumatic, something like something as natural as giving birth, someone might view as trauma. So now it gets confusing. Like, is trauma something really dramatic and terrible that happens to you? Or like you mentioned, sometimes something as simple as moving to a new town or switching to a different job or things like that. Can that be traumatic? What exactly is trauma?
Trauma is anything that puts you, that you do not have the resilience, resources, or capabilities to fight or to deal with, if that makes sense. So it's also a spectrum. It's not you either have trauma or you don't.
It's
also compacted trauma. So, for example, if I have experienced childbirth, you use that example, but I have the support systems. I am more resilient. I have more self-esteem, skills, whatever you want to call it, uh-huh. I'll be less likely to experience that as a traumatic event
right.
versus if something happens to me and it puts me so far out of my comfort zone
yeah.
that my body realizes this is a threat and I'm not resilient enough or resourced enough to deal with this threat, my body's going to continue to pick up on this threat.
Sure.
And then I get stuck in that threat space. And that's what we define as trauma.
Okay. That makes sense. Very interesting. So it's not necessarily the event itself. It is one's response to it, one's ability to respond to whatever that event might be.
Yes, definitely. And also we can have compacted trauma. Uh-huh. So sometimes you have a big traumatic event, but more often than not, trauma issues can also develop through little small traumas that have
yes.
happened,
okay.
that haven't been dealt with, that you haven't learned the skills for. And this has just put your body, your brain, your whole nervous system so on edge
yes.
that it starts to become hypervigilant and it starts just triggering off normally safe things as dangers.
I get you. All right. Now, as we're wrapping up our conversation, Yolanda, are there any warning signs that someone may be at risk of developing depression? It's so important for us to take note of these things even before they happen.
Definitely. As our discussion we had on Monday, it's going back to those signs, the emotional warning signs like persistent sadness, low mood, anger, outbursts, loss of interest, and behavioral, like moving away from friends and family, isolating yourself, physically getting ill, changes in sleep, those things, cognitive difficulty, remembering, thinking about it a lot. But for me, the most at risk are people with a family history of depression and mental illness, and those who are experiencing chronic stress, trauma, or major life changes.
Okay.
So if you're going through these big life changes, check in. If you know a friend that's going through these very difficult life changes, check in. You underestimate how much you're a support. Just being there, hey, I'm here, do you need to talk, can I come help, can I cook for you, just that stewardship and that community, how we like pitch up for each other. Individuals with a history of substance use or family history of substance abuse, people with chronic illness and pain, and those who lack a strong support system. These are the individuals that are more at risk of developing depression, but also be looking out for those emotional, cognitive, and behavioral signs.
And then when you speak about genetics, Yolanda, suppose someone has a parent who has had some kind of mental health or mental illness, but not specifically depression. Is that person also at risk of developing specifically depression?
Okay, the genes are not specific.
Okay.
So you have a predisposition for a mental health gene, and that can express in different ways. So you might not have a parent that has depression, but develop some other psychiatric disorder.
Okay.
And then you can develop depression from that. You are more vulnerable if you have that mental health gene, if I can put it that way. The specific gene is the 5-HTTLPR gene. It's involved in serotonin regulation in the body and your dopamine and stress hormone secretion. So very often when there's something wrong within that system, you kind of also have that. But don't throw out, yes, genetics, but then also remember, if it's a parent, you grew up in that household. You learned the same coping mechanisms.
Yes,
you learned the same responses to stress. You learned the same avoidance of emotional responses. So very big genetic influence, but there's also just that learned behavior that also puts you more at risk.
Beautiful. Now, just last question. Last question.
Yes, of course.
This is Adventist World Radio. We have a lot of people listening in who are, you know, they're Christians or they're trying to learn more about Christianity. And as we talk about mental illness and Christianity, sometimes one big thing that arises is you just need to pray more. You just have to have a little bit more faith. This whole talk about depression and mental illness, it's a sign of a lack of faith. What would you say to someone who's going through something and is feeling like maybe I'm just not praying hard enough, or maybe someone in my family is going through something and that's my feeling that, no, this person just needs to pray more?
I think that in that case, I always say, have your faith. You need your faith when going through something as difficult. God is with you. God loves you. And it is so important to really step in that. But trust God, but lock your car is kind of what I want to say in that regard. Uh-huh. Like, trust God and be with God, but you also have to do your part. I can't rely on God and pray more, but I am doing harm to myself or I am not showing up for myself. Yeah. You know, I eat McDonald's for breakfast, lunch, and dinner and then have a heart attack. It's not like me not praying to God was the cause of that.
Right.
We have to take responsibility for what we are doing.
Yeah.
Your faith is your support system, your community, and you need that. But you need to show up for yourself as well. God can't do it all alone.
Love that. Love that. All right. Thank you so much, Yolanda, and look forward to our next conversation. Thank you for coming through this morning.
Thank you so much, and see you on Friday.
All right.
Adventist World Radio SID Media. We are not general practitioners. We are specialists in Bible-based content.